One of the truly great things about our little country is the sheer volume of community support for those of us in need. Up and down Aotearoa, you will find people working tirelessly to help their peers with a true commitment to community spirit. On Take It From Us today, we want to shine a bright light on some of New Zealand's inspiring community heroes. Dee Glentworth is the founder of Free For All, a social enterprise about keeping goods out of landfill and giving them to those who need them. The website is freeforall.co.nz. I asked Dee how she came to establish Free For All and her motivation behind it.
So it starts with being a little crazy, I think. About 20 or 25 years ago, time goes so quick, I had a dream of this great big huge warehouse and everything, and it was free. And so I knew at some point in my life that that would be something I'd do. And we moved down to Wellington. I got involved in a really cool organisation down here called Koha Shed, worked with them for a little bit. But then I was asked a pivotal question by somebody, and it was, what drives you? Is it helping people or is it helping the environment? And I said, both. And they said, but what makes you crazy? I said, well, my husband won't take me to the dump anymore because I'm literally stopping the car, jumping out of it and taking stuff out of people's trailers. So we decided that it was definitely an environmental focus. So for us, that makes us a little different because our whole goal is actually just to keep usable stuff out of landfill and in the community. So that's kind of how we started and what we want to do.
So the number that I quoted earlier is 75% of all landfill items are actually usable.
Yeah,
that's an astonishingly big, almost like a mind-boggling number. Is it actually right?
It's staggering. So in our shop that we've got a 400 square meter warehouse. It's set up like any other op shop where people can just come in and choose items, except here you don't pay for them. But we're rehoming on average around 10,000 kg a month, and that's just from this one location. And that's without really involving furniture or anything like that. So it's housewares, it's clothing, it's shoes, it's books, it's toys, it's games. About on average 10,000 kgs. So it is a lot.
That's a lot of stuff. So presumably you're getting to the source early and saying, hey, look, before you throw all of this stuff out, bring it here, as opposed to actually trawling through other people's stuff at the dump.
Believe me, when I started doing this, I volunteered for an op shop and they would have bales, like big wool bales full of rubbish, which actually I worked out pretty quickly was surplus, not rubbish. And I'd spend my weekends going through the rubbish and picking out everything that I could to drop off to different organisations. So, yep, we are a lot wiser now and in a better place, so I'm not in as much rubbish. So we're like any other op shop. People can choose to use us to share their stuff for them. And just with us, it's got no financial cost attached to it. Yeah.
So how do people that want things and need, more importantly, they actually need things, how does it work?
Yeah, so you've mentioned the website. The website's fantastic because that's nationwide. And basically that's like Trade Me, but everything on it's free. So if you've got a couch and you no longer want it, you pop up a listing. There's a little bit more structure to ours than sort of around marketplace, and the fact that only one person can reserve the item. And that item is then reserved for 72 hours. If it's not completed, then you let us know and we run a three strikes, you're out sort of system, just because everyone's time is incredibly valuable. But that's great because that's contactless. You can leave the couch outside and when you get home from work, it's gone. The other way that we are trialing here in Wellington, have been doing for a little while now, is the concept of a free op shop. So we need to pay rent. Unfortunately, we don't have that covered yet. So there is a charge to the community, and the fact that they pay us $5 to help us with rent, power, you know, just the basics of providing a space to share. But then once they're in store, they can shop, and nothing has a cost attached to it. Everything is free. So if you want to come in and get the kids' winter clothes, you come in, you bring your shopping bags from home, you know, your supermarket shopping bags, and you just shop. And then all we ask is that as you walk out the door, you weigh the items. On we've got two sets of scales, you write it down, and that's how we know how much everyone's working together to keep out of landfill. We sort of just ask that people take what they can carry. So if you can carry 8 shopping bags full of clothes, then go for gold. Same with books, same with toys. Today we gave away a really amazing Fisher Paykel fridge freezer, washing machine yesterday. So we test all our electrical items to make sure that they're safe. But yeah, people just come and shop.
I see too, people could also jump on a bike and head home with a bag of school uniforms under their arm.
Exactly. Look, it's potluck. You never know what's going to be in the shop. We have everything from skirts that have never been worn that have a sale price of $370, right down to, you know, a toy car for kids to play with. So if it comes to us, it goes out. The value no longer matters, because to us, a $200 T-shirt has the same value as a $5 T-shirt because we're not selling it.
Hmm. Yeah. What's your sense of the people that you're helping?
Look, everybody, and everybody that comes in has their own story. And one thing about us, because we are environmentally focused, not financially focused, people don't have to tell us their story. So I don't know whether you've got 10 children at home. I don't know. And look, that's your personal stuff that you shouldn't have to share to access stuff to make your life better. You know, if the stuff's there, why aren't we using it instead of throwing it out? And why do people have to justify, you know, and that makes me really frustrated. So we have people who come in just because they love op shopping or they want to pay their $5 to support us. And then we have people that come in because, yes, they are looking after children that, you know, they don't have enough money to take care of. But what's great about it is somebody can come and shop with us, and their kids can wear a pair of Nikes to school the next day that have come from free-for-all, and no one knows whether they've come from the store at $280 or where they've come from. Just the kid can fit in because they're wearing the shoes like everyone else. So, I mean, there's lots of exciting stories. We've had so many incredible things shared with us. And to be fair, it's a complete blessing and an honour to be a part of this. It's very, very humbling. You know, we're seeing changes in not only people's physical circumstance, but, you know, in their psychological circumstance from coming along and volunteering with us and feeling like they've got a place to fit in and belong. And one of our big things is strong in our kaupapa is we all sit down and eat lunch together, and Free For All provides the lunch. And that way you get to know the people that are sharing your space. They're not just workmates, they become friends and family. So, yeah, so there's a whole lot going on.
And given the cost of living, it's been described as a crisis. Are you noticing that in terms of the number of people or the demands for products recently?
I think, you know, that's always going to be something that's going to drive anything like this. But also, more so, I think, because we rely on word of mouth and the names getting out there a bit more, we are most definitely seeing an increase, which is really, really exciting, because what's the use of having stuff if you don't have a way to rehome it? But look, I think it's definitely hard for everybody out there. It's not an easy time as we all adjust to the changes with COVID, and, you know, you can't always get the stuff that you want on the shelves, but, you know, someone might have it in the back of their closet and drop it off here and bingo, you can access it. you know, so it's crazy out there at the moment.
Must be very rewarding. I guess it's a vocation for you. It's more than a job, Dee, from all accounts. I mean, it must be extremely rewarding for you to be part of this.
It's absolutely mind-blowing. Look, and I can't thank my family more. I was a teacher and earning reasonable money, you know, doing relief work and stuff. And we'd moved to Wellington from Hawke's Bay, so our costs increased exponentially with two teenagers. But my whole my husband and my amazing children supported me walking away from that paid job to taking free-for-all on. And everything that that entailed, including the cost for us to run around and pick things up and, you know, to throw free garage sales on the front lawn. And look, it's I can't imagine a time in my life without this now. It's blessed me and shaped me and so many others in so many ways. It's just extraordinary. So much more than just free stuff.
And you can get in touch with Dee and her team at freeforall.co.nz. Melissa Moore established the Pride Project in Manurewa, South Auckland. It works to combat antisocial activity and to support people with complex needs who are falling through the cracks. Melissa's story begins with a drive through her hometown a few years ago.
So, yeah, the story kind of goes about 6 years ago because I've been raised in Manurewa and all my family have been here for about five generations. About 6 years ago, I was just sort of driving through the Clendon town centre and just sort of, I guess, saw how our community felt like there were lots of unloved spaces and it was just sort of lots of dumping and rubbish everywhere and litter, but then also the social way people were sort of treating each other, where they were treating their kids and things, was also pretty antisocial. And for me, it was a personal decision of whether just sort of, do I do something about it? Because I've got four children and we're driving through and they're locking all their doors. They're like, Mum, can we go shop somewhere else? And I was like, do we do something about it or do I just take my kids and move somewhere else? And, yeah, just got a bunch of different stakeholders together and thought, gosh, this can't be it, you know, for Manurewa, like for our community, especially in Clendon. And, yeah, just sort of started doing things.
Well, yeah. What have you done? Tell us specifically what you've been able to achieve.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's a long story. We've done a lot in a very short period of time. So when we first started, we were known as a Clendon Pride Project. And essentially back then, one of the first things we did was work with the police and Manukau Beautification Trust and Rising Foundation. And there's this bank opposite the Work and Income down at Clendon or MSD. And this, and so you had our people sort of lining up outside almost, you know, going in there and feeling a lot, you know, disempowerment. And then they'd look across at this bank and the bank was full of rubbish and rats, like the size of cats running up and down and just really, just a really gross space. And so one of the first things we thought to do was to build a food forest. So that's still there to this point. We just cleaned it all out. And it was just creating love spaces and places that helped to, I don't know, just inspire people to feel a bit better, have their mana sort of uplifted a little bit. We also worked with a youth group and well-known graffiti artists, Janine and Charles Williams. And so we had this opportunity of this blank wall space. And I was approached by Foodstuffs at the time. And I think they wanted us to do like a cute little mural there with kids, and I thought, no, this is our opportunity to really flip the script out here. And so, you know, Foodstuffs have some money. And so I basically said, listen, we'll do the mural, but I want it to be a fresh start. And so, yeah, there's an amazing mural down there as well, which kind of tells the story of our community out here in our Maunga, in the Marae, and yeah, just it all weaving together. And I just wanted that to be there, and I feel like quite cool at night when I go down and see that. Many things, advocacy, like to the town centre. So now there's a, you know, there's a Manurewa Business Association, which now covers Clendon as well. So advocacy in terms of just uplifting the pride of that whole town centre as a whole. So there was stuff happening at the town centre in terms of placemaking and events, lots of placemaking and events just to try and flip the script in the community. But then what happened was I was offered the opportunity to reactivate a community house that I'm sitting in right now that was locked up and used to be an old Housing New Zealand office. And so I thought, oh, I'll give it a shot. So I started running different activations and programs and different things there. And then I guess I fell upon this, I guess, model of hope navigation. And so I've got now an army of hope navigators. But in the beginning, I was the OG, you know, the original hope navigator. And really what that is just people with lived experience who have been through a whole ton of stuff in their lives. Like they inspire me so much, our hope navigators. you know, trauma, all the different things that have sort of brought them to where they are, overcome addictions, could be suicide ideation, you name it, but they've done that healing piece of work, you know, so they've gone through the healing that they've wanted to go through or that they needed to go through. And then since coming on as Hope Navigators, I'm very passionate. I was a teacher for 10 years just about professional development and growth and learning. So we just do tons of development, tons of growing and having all the tools in our kitty to be able to help our people. So that combination of lived experience mentors with all the tools they need to be able to support and engage our whānau to Māori order, because that's our focus, to pathway people to Māori order. That's kind of what started evolving and coming out. And so I was like, man, this is working for our people, this model of Hope Navigation. And so that's what they're called, Hope Navigators. And from there, yeah, I mean, it was a long journey. It was a long journey of advocacy, just wanting to actually do nice things and be a good human. But I realized quite quickly that you won't get taken seriously unless you have all your crap together. So then we had to basically, become a charitable trust. So we went through that process. So we're now called the Pride Project Charitable Trust, because I actually believe in this model. So we have all of Manurewa and further, but I believe this model could be actually all throughout Aotearoa, and you just find the Hope Navigators from that community, just build them and grow people, and then they can then help and grow their own people in the community, because that's a sustainable model. And also it's putting our local people in some employment. So yeah, last year we were basically able to secure contracts with MSD, so contracted by MSD with a Community Connector contract. I've designed quite a few programs myself when I've seen the gaps in our community. So one's called Māori Mahi Māori Order, which is pathwaying people into employment. But you can't just say go and get a job, especially if they're battling an addiction. They might have a depression. They might also have unstable housing and maybe domestic violence going on. We need to look at our people as that holistic whole picture. All those things impact them, you know, like their wharetapa whā is kind of out of line. So we'll journey and walk with them for 3 months and then get them into employment after we've done that mana restoration piece of work. And then most recently, amongst a ton of other things we've done over the years, really excited about opening a new youth hub in Clendon. So to be able to take it back to the town centre was kind of like full circle for me. Yeah, so we've opened a youth hub down there called Mangopare, which is the Māori word for like hammerhead shark, and because it's like the most resilient sea creature in the ocean, you know, apparently. So it goes, once they're killed, even their flesh still quivers. Yeah, so we're just down at the youth centre now. I've got, so we had funding, I applied for something, through Here Potama Rangatahi funding through MB, which has now been pathwayed over to MSD. So it's a pilot. It was, again, I guess the work I've done in the community, seeing the gaps for our youth. You can't treat them, you know, like you can't not acknowledge the homes they go back to and the family and the trauma and everything that they're involved in. So for us, I want to see them as people, figure out what makes them tick, what hasn't worked for them in school. So it is an alternative education program, but it's really holistic. We take them on that journey of uncovering and discovering who they are, like letting them know their strengths and that they have so much to give. And it's been so beautiful. It's only been running for 1 month, but the fact that, you know, you've got these kids, I just cry all the time because I'm like a big baby and I just feel so invested. But, you know, them saying, I feel like I've been seen for the first time in my life is just pretty rewarding stuff. And also, you know, if you can shift that trajectory and break some of those intergenerational chains and cycles, that's a blessing to be a part of. And we're trying to take the whānau on the journey with that as well. So, that's sort of where things are at for us now. So I kind of started 6 years ago with myself and a $15,000 grant from the local board when I wasn't on the local board, which I also am on the local board now. But, it's a bit crazy. Now we've got a team. I think we've got about 12 employed staff. We've got contractors, and for me it's just all driven from helping our people how they need to be helped, like keeping it whānau and our people informed. And I spend a lot of my time advocating and fighting in the systems and all the other stuff, you know, and working with all the mess and removing all the barriers as much as I possibly can so our people can just pathway to Māori order, because a lot of the time they just haven't been heard or haven't been seen. So that's kind of in a nutshell what we're up to. We also, with the community house, is super activated. We've got a whare tautoko, which is a free secondhand shop, and we've got a tool library so our people can come and use the tool library, the lawnmower and the weed eater to take pride in their own patch. I've got a volunteers crew who are amazing, and we've got a food hub. So we do home isolation support across the community. Like, we've basically been on the ground for lockdown, just responding for the last 2 years, as well as still ensuring that we run all of our other programs and help pathway our people to wellbeing. Yes, so that's in a nutshell.
And tell us one specific case or an example of success that you've seen.
There have been so many, to be honest with you. Just people getting their children back. There was one, I guess, is one of my earlier memories when we first started, and there was a whānau that turned up that had their children uplifted off them, and they were struggling with methamphetamine addiction and living in their car when they turned up at the house. And so for most people, it's like, whoa, that's pretty hopeless. And a lot of the traditional places you'd go to, all the services people would tell them to go to, you know, weren't really, they were just saying, sorry, there's just no housing or whatever. So where we fit quite well and what I'm quite passionate about is I will go into and I will work with Oranga Tamariki and the police and whatever it takes to basically pathway our people to success and just advocate, just be that person in their corner. So that whānau, like, long story short, and it wasn't a short journey, it was months. It's really just you're that continuous person calling them, going, did you turn up to that today? We'll take you on this journey. You've got to be straight with us because, like, we can't help you if you don't tell us everything. But yeah, long story short, in the end, you go through all the yucky stuff and all the hard stuff, and they committed to their own journey to Māori Ora. They became clean. They connected in with the local church. Their kids ended up going to school. They ended up getting a house and they got their children placed back in their care. And yeah, so that was just a really early story for me to be like, shucks, this can actually work, you know, when you just really advocate, remove the barriers. And for people just to actually see, I think that you're not going to go anywhere. Like, you fully believe in them and there's no time frames for us. Like, it's hard sometimes with government contracts and things because it's like, yeah, they want you to fit into boxes, but like, we're not going anywhere. I've personally in this last week or two been working to really advocate for some youth in our community who have got themselves in trouble, but I'm just, you know, turning up to that house day after day, knocking on those doors and working with all the services involved and just saying, we're not going anywhere. Like, we're going to keep turning up and knocking on this door.
And you can check out the Pride Project via their website, theprideproject.co.nz. Hope Walk has grown into an enormous worldwide Facebook community, but its origins are in South Auckland. Hope Walk is a community-led movement which gives individuals, families and communities who have been affected by suicide a place to connect with others who have also lost loved ones. On Take It From Us, we spoke to founder Joseph Fa'afu about personal loss, grief and a desire to change his community's attitude to suicide.
2010, we lost a friend to suicide. They kind of put us on this journey of finding out how we could help those around us, or first and foremost, help ourselves and also help those around us. The concept for Hope Walk in itself started in 2015 of really just getting a community together of like-minded people who were going through the same thing, didn't have any answers to the questions, but also just wanted to actually get together and be resourced and empowered so they can find their place of healing and hope through Hope Walk or some other organisation. So we wanted to connect our community at the end of the day.
And you touch on something really important, I think, there, which was to learn how to cope yourself and then be able to help others. You're strong, if you're in a stronger position to be able to do that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so a big thing for us is really just empowering the individuals and the families first. They've been affected or actually go through some really traumatic situations and really empower them first. And then from there, what we've realized is that the greatest champions of change are those affected by the cause. So we wanted to empower them so they can go and empower their community, their families, their friends, and be the resource that their friends and their families needed.
So I guess it's purposefully driven that people who have experienced people around them who have been suicidal, that they can then start to be the backbone for this growing movement, having been through it themselves.
That's right. Yeah. What we found is that those are the most, if we can get them to a safe place where they can cope with, find out how to cope with some of the triggers, but also find out where their safety net is and also a safe place for them. What we found is that they go on to become some of the most phenomenal voices. They have a lived experience, but actually can help others cope and also find the help that they need.
How did you personally cope, Joseph, when you lost your friend?
For us, it was more just engaging with family, really just being open, having open discussion. There were some close mates around us as well that we really just, to be honest, it wasn't something that we normally talked about. And so it made it more, the awareness of it, it was raw, made it more conversational. We needed to talk about it. And so some of my mates just got around and we just started to talk through it. We didn't have any answers, more just being there for each other. And we're still there for each other today. And so it's an ongoing thing. It's not a one-off thing. It's an ongoing journey.
Yeah, and it can leave you feeling like you need to find answers and you're desperately searching for answers.
Yeah.
But sometimes we're left, sadly, without even knowing what was inside that person's head, which is really sad.
That's so true.
Yeah. Do you find... Have you found there's been a different shift within your community about kōrero and just having a conversation and being there for each other in the years since you lost your friend?
Yeah, there's been a lot of... because our friends' daughters, they come to our Hope Walks. They were very young at the time when they lost their mum. So they come to our Hope Walks. And I think for me personally and my wife, seeing them over the years has really... given us strength to see that they've lost something, but also gained a community around them to help them through. But yeah, it's great in the sense that people can talk about it. Now, these other great people out there that are doing great work in this space, they've actually engaged with awareness and also speaking out, being there for one another and so forth. So yeah, it's really, really good. People can actually be open about it and actually discuss it, but also in a safe way. You want to make sure it's done safely.
Hmm. How do you ensure that?
Yeah, so we have a lot of partnerships on the ground with a lot of people that we engage with. Our first year, we had an engagement with Youth Line. And then also we're just a growing network of mates on the ground, you know, other organizations that actually have like-minded attitude of actually coming together. And we have this big philosophy around strong, we use the term stronger together. And we believe that a community working together for the sake of the community is stronger than any individual, one person, one community, a group, you know, because there's so many community groups. It's really just engaging with our strengths and collaboratively working together that can actually help actually make it easier for our communities who are struggling or going through this.
So tell us about the walks. What is involved in a Hope Walk?
Yeah, so the Hope Walk, it's evolved over the years. So it's been going now for, 7 years now? And so every town is different. Every nation is different. So basically the essence of it is really just walking together and talking. And so we have a framework of three things. We have connection, which is a big part of it. Communication and care. Those are three C's that we use. And what we do is pick a length of a length that we can walk, and we just walk it. So maybe a 2K walk, maybe a 3K walk. Our first one was a 7K walk. That was a long distance. And basically what we ask people to do is bring their wear yellow t-shirts because it's the color of hope, and also bring photos with them or things that are very symbolic for them on this journey. And so we just walk together, and what we find is there's no judgment. Everyone's open because everyone's been through the same thing. And it's evolved over years. Some of them have turned into music festivals. Some of them have turned into community festivals around health promotion. And some of them have actually continued to be walks, but in different environments, you know. So it's empowering that everyone is different, but they have the sense that we just continue to engage with people, talk about things, and also walk together.
And it really does look like a movement. I see you're close to 20,000 people on Facebook now.
Yeah, it's gone around the world. So last 2 weeks ago, we had our walk in New Mexico. And so that's how far then. And it's strange because you got the New Mexico 1 week, and then you got Taranaki just this last week, you know.
Yeah.
And so you're bouncing between nations. And so as restrictions are lifted, everyone starts going into kind of working out how they can walk again. We got walks in West Belfast in Ireland. Australia, Fiji, Canada, America, Indiana, Utah, and we've got our new one starting up start of next year, in Brazil. So
you'll have to get to some of these places, Jason.
I know. I've got a list of ones I would love to just go along and be part of it, you know, just walk with the community.
Well, I mean, you guys started it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty. Do you know what empowers me is really just looking at the faces of those people, you know? Same story as everyone else, but I just love the fact that they want to be there. They're not judged, and they want to be in a safe environment where they can find, like I said, healing and hope. So that's what encourages me. So I just want to go there and be part of this. And I just love the fact that they can be in a safe environment and actually walk together.
So just tell us again the countries where Hope Walk has popped up outside of New Zealand.
So we've got Australia. We've got a few in Australia. And we had one in Fiji. And then we had two in Canada. And then we've got about three in the United States at the moment. And then we got one in Ireland, West Belfast. And then we have the new one starting early next year is Brazil.
Wow. Yeah. So you're all over the show. You're in Australasia, you're in North America, you're in Europe, you're in South America. It's an amazing story. What do people tell you after they've been on a Hope Walk and they've shared that experience with other people? What do they take away with them?
One of the biggest things for me personally that I've heard over the years is the sense of I feel safe here. That comment, I feel safe here. And also there's one lady that stood out for me and was on our first walk. And I remember walking with her, hearing her story, and after she lost to her brother. And I remember at the end of that walk, she said to me, you know, I don't feel guilty anymore. And she had held on to the guilt of losing her brother for 23 years. And so even in that moment, you know, for her to find, I guess, solace in actually knowing that people were around her were in the same situation or had been through loss like that, made us realize that even just being there for someone and just being able to listen is powerful as well.
Isn't that amazing? A small group in South Auckland has inspired many thousands of people around the world to engage their local communities to talk, to really listen, and to walk for hope. The Hope Walk Suicide Prevention Movement can be found at their website, hopewalk.online. Thank you for listening to the Take It From Us podcast. Our show is produced by Karen Murphy. Our sound engineer is Paul Hannon at Planet FM and is hosted by me, Kent Johns. We're proudly supported by Ember Kotawai Takatini. Remember, you can follow the show on Facebook. Please drop us a note to say hi. We'd love to hear from you.